Welcome to Web Talk Radio at webtalkradio.com for July 14th, 2006. And I am Rob Greenlee, back in the house here with Dana Greenlee.
Yes, and I finally get to see you. The man's working
too
hard.
Yes, and it has been a while since we've done a show. We apologize. But we're back, and I'm determined to keep this ball moving forward.
You know who it was that brought us together?
It was
glue.
Mitch.
It was Mitch.
Mitch is the man.
Mitch is joining us here today. Hi.
Mitch. I'm here as a marriage counselor today, so I just want you to each feel comfortable, and this is your safe place.
Mitch Radcliffe is a blogger at radcliffeblog.com and is also a rational ranter with ZDNet with his Rational Rant blog.
Rants.
With an S.
It's a plural.
It's more than one rant at a time? Is that
No, it's just collected under the headline of Rational Rant.
Ah, okay.
Now, Dana, is everything okay at home?
Well, I could rant about it a little bit right now, but no, it's fine. Thank you very much.
Rob, are you feeling comfortable during your inordinately long commute to Seattle?
I'm getting as comfortable as I'm going to be since it's almost been a year now that I've been doing this.
Rob's totally bucked the system because for the last, I don't know, 5, 8, 10 years, you've been working
from home.
Yeah. And this is weird to have him drive an hour each day.
You know? Yeah, it was shocking to my schedule and my system and my tendencies towards life.
Well, it's important when you're having these kinds of challenges in your marriage that you each have a support infrastructure.
Yes,
now, let's
do.
Go over the 17 layers of the support infrastructure.
He's morphed into Dr. Phil.
It's Dr. Mitch.
Well, let's listen to some of the things we're going to rant about
today. We should probably run through some of the things we're going to talk about here. Do we really need net neutrality? We're going to talk a little bit of the nuts and bolts about how the users might be affected by this.
And it looks like they're stoking the fires at that global browser war. It's heating up again.
Is podcast just one big state of confusion, sort of like Montana? And also, according to Nielsen Net Ratings, podcasting might even be bigger than blogging if you count very strangely.
Yes. And Rocket Boom 2.0 launches, but without Amanda. Do we really care?
I could take her or leave her.
Yeah.
Well, Rob and Dana.
Well, we took care of that. Well, thanks very much.
That's right. I don't think we need to talk about Amanda anymore. No.
You can reach us and tell us what you think about Amanda if you want. You can talk to Rob, virtually talk to him, at rob@webtalkradio.com. Myself at dana@webtalkradio.com. Mitch, do you want to lay it on us? Tell us where we can reach you.
godsdog@ratcliffe.com.
And he is. We're also proud members of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. And the network has some great technology podcast shows. Go check it out. You can also get Web Talk on your mobile phone now at Melodio's Mobilecast at mobilecast.com. Just drop the E. And go visit Melodio's new community website around podcasting. You can create a playlist there and, you know, have fun with podcasts.
And share it,
which you
did to me today.
I did. I spammed you with a... with the link to, actually, Ted Koppel is doing a National Public Radio program now.
Yes.
Which I desperately miss Ted because he is no longer doing Nightline. I used to watch him.
Was he the voice of reason in your life?
He was the voice of reason and the voice of credible journalism, I might add.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he'd been spending the last 6 months spinning in his grave. What's happened to...
Oh, yeah, his...
Sensational television,
yeah,
Nightline.
His program kind of has gone downhill a little bit since he left, I would say.
He was
first one, you know, when they went, but it was America in Crisis. And then it was somewhere like on day 45, they realized it was going to be a long crisis. So they turned it into Nightline.
That's how it started? What crisis was it?
The hostages.
Oh,
with Iran.
From the 70s? Yeah. From
no,
the
80s.
Carter administration, though?
The 70s.
Yeah, Carter.
It happened in 79.
79. Okay, I thought it was the 80s, but okay.
That's how old I am.
The end of Carter.
That's how old all of us are. But
yeah. I definitely remember that program and watched it diligently over the years. So.
Where were you in 79, Mitch?
I was in Tacoma. I had graduated from high school. And
so you're an angry young man?
I wasn't angry.
Okay.
I was very mellow.
Oh, I see. It was college. Yeah.
No, but I remember because it was before I went to WSU and I had an apartment and... I would get home from working in a restaurant, and Ted Koppel was on, and originally he was part of a crisis, and then he just became a TV show.
Yeah, well, and also what's kind of interesting about this is National Public Radio has really been working hard to build out their podcast offering. They've actually added a lot of terrific podcasts to their lineup of stuff, and I think they're going to do exactly like what they did with streaming for many years online and be the dominant podcast network. that's going to have the most Rob stuff and the most listeners.
Rob is making a convergence gesture with his hands as he says that.
They're going to take over the world, I think,
and,
with
as podcasting. As he says take over the world, his hands are sort of grasping and pushing together. This is radio. You can't use hand gestures.
We're kind of striving to...
People at home don't see the hand gestures.
To make this
is how it works.
Almost like audio theater. Is that what we're trying to do here? We're trying to give these... our listeners, the mental impression about what's actually happening in the studio.
It's kind of a sports newscaster, sportscaster thing going on.
But when you, and there's a little silence and your hands are going like they are.
It's kind of hard
for the folks at home to play
that.
Along. Yeah. So I'm just wanting to make sure that they know.
That's true.
Right. They're turning us off right now. Let's talk about
something. Probably are, but I'm in such a bad mood because of Quest. So.
Yeah.
We should probably dive into the net neutrality issue a little bit, which I know is really... Mitch is really enthused.
Oh, he loves to talk about
this topic because it's such a confusing topic about net neutrality, and so few people really understand the subtleties and the interconnections and the network and the.
Can you just define it first for those that are just hearing that those two words together for the first time?
Net neutrality is a basic principle about access to the net and the idea that if you're going to charge for packets to fly over a network, that they be charged at basically the same cost based on the level of service at each end of the connection, mm-hmm. not on the costs of the network service provider that carries them. So what's happened is that carriers are increasingly trying to say, look, if you want to get your stuff to our customers, our ISP customers quickly, you have to pay us more.
Mm-hmm.
They're reacting to the fact that their capacity is being eaten up by BitTorrent streams.
Mm-hmm.
Right, back
well,
and forth,
and
whenever
video,
it is high as,
yeah,
as high as 80% of backbone traffic now is BitTorrent streams. People are making choices about the content they want, watching it or downloading it, not even watching it, but they're doing it wastefully from the perspective mm-hmm. of the carriers. Unfortunately, wastefully is the way that free communication happens.
Yes,
and so the carriers are looking for the ability to create basically tiered services even within the backbone, so that you can have very high-priority traffic move through the network quickly. The problem is that gives them business leverage to demand more money from content providers or from us as customers.
Mm-hmm. On both ends of the spectrum,
ends,
I would think.
Yeah. Where they already have mm-hmm. a monopoly or duopoly price control market in local access. I mean, you might have two choices for broadband where we are right now. That's not a lot of competition.
And in many markets, there's probably only one choice.
Yeah. And in fact, there would be only one choice in the South Puget Sound area right now if Tacoma hadn't gone ahead and built its own network.
Yeah, exactly. That network is very competitive to Comcast because it also offers television mm-hmm. service as well as broadband access.
And telephone service.
It's not quite as fast as Comcast is right at this moment, but it's very close.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if we did have to switch from Comcast because of these unruly regulations and maybe port blocking and all of the funny things that they might try to pull on us down the line, that we've talked about this many times on the mm-hmm. show as something that they could do.
Very easily. I mean, yeah. I had a Comcast cable modem connection on which they were blocking a VPN port that I was using. And I know there's somebody out there who says that this never happened to me, but I know multiple people it happened to. So, and it happened to me. They wanted $39 a month, $39.99 or $95 extra to unblock that port.
Yeah.
And it was a VPN port mm-hmm. that, you know, just was something I used to keep in touch with my office in San Francisco. And that's just ridiculous. I mean, I had a very good analogy. It's the idea that if you were sending gold, a ton of gold and a ton of lead over FedEx, and they were both wrapped, you would have no idea which one was a ton of gold and which one was a ton of lead.
Mm-hmm.
They would be treated exactly the same. What the carriers want to do is be able to look at the content, the destination, the originating endpoint of the content, and perhaps even what the content is, whether it's video or text or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and then to say, well, we want more for that particular type of packet.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the argument is that they could do tiered level of service, and that would make sure that, say, our video or our voice calls got through in real time if we were doing real-time video. Downloading a movie is something that, you know, you could drop packets half the day as long as it was there by the end of the day when you were going to play it. You wouldn't notice it. So there's high priority traffic like voice calls. If you drop bits, you get broken calls. And there's low priority like a file or mm-hmm. you know, something that is not going to be used immediately. And the carrier said, well, we could deliver that stuff that needs to go faster, faster. Well, they could also just deliver everything fast,
mm-hmm.
which is their business.
Which is what they're doing right now.
Yeah. But they want to be able to change their business to go back in time to something that looks a lot more like that sort of carrier-controlled environment that we used to live in before the internet came along, where you had AOL.
Sounds like a walled garden to me.
Yeah, your own little world.
Yeah.
And so the principle of net neutrality has been pushed on a variety of fronts and has been endorsed and advocated by people like Vint Cerf, one of the fathers of the internet, and mm-hmm. Tim Berners-Lee, who invented the web, and many other people. Mm-hmm. And I just happen to have gone through a whole week of arguing with somebody who was very vociferous on the other side.
One thing that's also a little twist to this in a perceptional standpoint is that when you look at a lot of the carriers or the people that are providing access right now, a lot of them are getting into wireless more and more. I mean, if you look mm-hmm. at Verizon Wireless as a good example, they very much on the wireless side, and I'm talking about to mobile phones and those kind of platforms, have very much a walled garden. It's very restrictive. It's very controlled. Only certain kind of content passes through the network, and they're able to monetize that individually. And what I'm thinking is that that philosophy that's existed for years in the carriers and the wireless carrier networks are starting to come into the broadband networks.
Well, yeah, what they want to do is inject that model now.
Yep.
Doc Searles pointed me to a letter canceling somebody's service from Verizon Broadband, and they have a phone, not the card that you put into a PC, which, so anyway, this is an unlimited service according to the service. This person got a letter saying, well, you downloaded 10 gigabytes of stuff on your phone, so you're clearly not doing the things that we told you not to do. What they accused the person of doing was streaming and downloading music and videos.
Oh, no.
Okay. Terrible.
Terrible stuff.
Verizon has a service, which is part of the package, where you can download movies and video and songs, and there's no limits. Mm-hmm. They're basically saying, if you don't download movies and video from us, you can't do it. So for some reason, this 10 gigabyte number was proof that this person had done more than, as their ads say, is to surf the web. I happen to think surfing the web includes downloading the things you see.
Plus,
the other thing is the word unlimited for broadband access implies something other than not
limited.
10 gigabytes. And so, there's just a lot of these really stupid
games that they're playing with people out there. And frankly, I think it's going to come back and bite all these guys. I'm not quite sure that this is something that they will attempt to do for a while. And what's interesting, if you look at Comcast is one of those providers that has been fairly open up till now.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm getting a sense that they're getting pressure from these other companies to lock it down as well. And
well, that implies that there's collusion going on. And I don't necessarily think there's collusion going along. I think that this is just what the carriers think they need to do to get more out of their current capital investments.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing pretty good with their current capital investments and ought to just build more bandwidth and capacity. And, the fact is that if I could get 100 megabit service at home, I'd pay for it. And I'd be paying just as I did 10 years ago when I had a T1 in my house because I wanted a fast connection, I'd pay $1,000 a month for that or, $500 a month or whatever the right number is.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that once you have that kind of capacity at one end, you want the rest of the net to work that way. So the carrier's business has always been to put the money into the backbone in order to leverage it by selling access at the edges. What I would describe as provisioning from the edges where the user is saying, this is how much capacity I want. And they're not. They don't want to be in that business anymore.
Why don't they just sell based on the volume and capacity that that users will use? So, I mean, I'm not necessarily opposed to paying a little bit extra if I use a lot more bandwidth on the network. As long as it's still viewed as an unlimited plan, but maybe I get up to 10 megs of access instead of 6 megs or 4 megs, and that's the criteria that's actually used to the gauge actually get.
You mean throughput? Yeah, well, that's basically what you do at the edge already.
Yeah.
And you should be, therefore, getting that kind of performance mm-hmm. across the web because the choke points are at the edges. And I don't think that putting choke points into the network is a good way to solve that mm-hmm. problem. And the mm-hmm. choke points would be things like, if you're going to use the network, you're going to have to make sure that your application can contact a billing database on the network. Well, now, do you write an application that can contact the billing database for the provider that you deal with? mm-hmm. or for every provider, because you have to communicate with every provider's network at some point, or through every provider's network at some point. There's all sorts of really hairy, unanswered questions about how you would make this work that has a lot of people who develop web services very concerned, because you know, they want to be able to say, look, your site's too popular, we want to charge you more for that. That's a very, very bad situation for an innovative environment like the web.
Well, it's more risk, I think, is what it really is. It's probably not that the business couldn't probably afford to probably pay it if they had to, but it's just more risk and uncertainty that could squash people's willingness to take risk.
Well, yeah, and it's the fact that so many people have taken risks out there at the edge that have driven the size of the network that it is today.
Yeah.
The carriers, you know, are making as much or more than they did 10 years ago. It's just that the price of they happen to be in a business that is a commodity business. Sorry, guys, you chose to get in that business, forcing your way into the service business that runs over that commodity is not the way for you to get into bigger bucks. The way to get into bigger bucks is to build a faster, better performing network overall, not by saying, oh, you know, you use Google. That means Google pays a tax to us for being so darned wasteful of our bandwidth.
So do you think that any cost increases that could come into, let's say, an Amazon.com will be passed on in prices?
How much has the cost of milk gone up in the last? How much has the cost of milk gone up in the last 6 months?
I have no idea.
It's something like 30%, and almost all of that comes from the fact that, I mean, there's some, because we use petroleum based feed and stuff too, but you know, most of that is the fact that transportation is so much higher. And so what we're talking about is the transportation guys. Want more money for what they already have, not even for what they're going to build, but what they already have. The other thing is they're going to have to spend a lot of money to put this kind of a billing system in place in the first place. So they're going to spend that on unproductive, non-bandwidth related investments rather than just building more bandwidth, which would be the thing to do.
They can justify building transaction technology because then that's revenue.
Yeah, and from a business perspective, they can go back to their investors and say, look, we get more out of every unit of throughput that we have during the month. Okay, great. But at the same time, if they're choking off innovation on the web, ultimately they're going to slow the growth of that thing and not have as much to sell.
We've talked about this, I know, many times over the years, the whole concept of a browser war, but it does seem like things are heating up on that side in reality with the growth of Firefox. Actually, in the U.S. market right now, they've gained as high a market share as almost 16% of the users in the U.S. right now with Firefox. And it's right on the cuff of the launch of the new Internet Explorer 7, which could kind of erode that back down again, but we'll have to see. And then what's interesting is in countries overseas like Australia, Firefox usage is up around 24%, and in Germany it's up in 39%.
So where has Microsoft been restricted from tying the browser to the OS? Strangely enough, in Europe.
Interesting, yeah.
Oh.
Which
so you might actually get the sense that there was some truth to the charges of tying.
That is certainly true. The other browser that's picked up not a huge market share. It's about 1% worldwide. But if you think about 1% of how many web users are, that's still a pretty big number of users out there. So Microsoft is definitely getting challenged here, and I'm not sure whether the IE7 is going to convert those people back again. You know, I know Firefox just released their Firefox 2 beta, I think it was just this week. And have you had a chance to play with it, Mitch?
A little bit. I updated it, but I haven't noticed substantial dramatic changes that I would jump for joy over. But then again, it's just a browser.
Well, I would kind of expect that they wouldn't make dramatic changes to it, because what they've done is they've conditioned the users to expect a certain experience. And if they start adding features, they're going to get back to some of the problems that the IE had.
Yeah, well, I use all the browsers.
Yeah, I do too.
So I'm not sure why this is that big a deal, except, you know, the
you guys are unusual, though, that you use all the browsers. Most of us just have the one.
Yeah,
I know, I know a lot of people who, you know, they have two different browsers because
one browser.
They have one browser who's
capable of doing one thing.
Well, no, because they have one browser that's homepage is my Yahoo, and another browser that's my that is MSN homepage, and they actually think of it almost like different magazines on the table.
Or is it truly each application kind of has its own application purpose? I mean, is that kind of where it's heading? I mean, if you think about it, I mean, if a person is using a browser like that, where they use a browser for specific types of websites, the direction of web services. It's almost like that's the browser could wind up being that kind of a platform where I use my email in this application. I use my Word in this browser.
And, mm-hmm. You don't find they yell at each other all the time. That's my one foray into having Firefox and IE, and they just kept trying to shut each other down, so to speak.
Yeah, the first time you see that, or any time you see that, you can just say, don't tell me this again, when it says, I'm not mm-hmm. the current default browser.
You're going to make me current?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but then it goes away.
But then it took all the HTML files I have on my computer and made them unviewable in IE.
It did?
I don't even know why, and I probably shouldn't even bring this up now. But that's why I just dislike Firefox, because it now made it impossible for me to view any of my HTML files. I just launch, clicking the file.
Jesus must not like Firefox.
Yeah, I think it must have gone through and done some file associations or something like that with your browser.
Yeah, it's probably user problems. But we should mention, too, if anybody missed it, a few web talk shows ago, you talked to the original writer of the Firefox.
Mm-hmm. Blake Ross.
Blake Ross. Yeah.
Who was at Gnome Dex and got into a big yelling match with Dave Weiner.
it's a proud tradition.
And I thought Blake held his ground pretty well.
It's not that hard to hold your ground against Dave. It's mostly just making sure that he gets to say what he has to say and then he stops.
Yeah, well, that's true. But it seems like Firefox is doing well.
I really want to hear you two guys talk about Gnome Dex. I know that's not on our schedule.
The thing is, everybody at Gnome Dex is saying, are you going to have an argument with Dave this year?
Yeah, Mitch, we've kind of missed that.
I know.
So are you going to pick a fight with him again? Or
no, I don't. I mean,
there's got to be something that's going to come
up.
I took him on the whole blogger on the bus thing. He tried to, he did knock the idea.
Oh, that's right, he did. I think I did read that.
Which I thought was sort of, at odds with everything he said for the past 5 years, so I think he only did it because he didn't like what I had to say.
We should probably give the context for that. Mr. Edwards.
Senator Edwards.
Senator Edwards, the former Democratic vice presidential nominee mm-hmm. in the last U.S. presidential election, was a keynote speaker at Gnome Dex.
And I had asked a question basically challenging the Edwards campaign to put somebody who recorded everything the candidate did on the bus. Mm-hmm. This was interpreted by people as putting a blogger on the bus, but I was actually saying something a little more complete than that. In any case, Dave ends up in the Seattle Post-Intelligencer saying, well, that's a dumb idea, unless, of course, it's me, which is what he said. And
did he name you as the dumb idea originator?
No, I'm saying, unless it was Dave. And he said, it's a stupid idea. And then Steve Rebell, who was sitting next to him, said, well, they should put you on the bus. Oh. And he said, that would be a good idea. So... Dave is Dave, and he's done some brilliant things.
I don't think that they'd be wise to put Dave on the bus. What do you think?
I think that they would be wise to put a whole lot of different people on the bus at different times. If Dave happened to be one of them, I think that the result would speak volumes not about Senator Edwards, but about Dave.
And that's where the problem is, yeah. I don't know. What do you think? You think he's actually going to fall through on
I got an email from Ryan Montoya.
You did?
His aide on technology.
Oh, Edward's aide?
Yesterday morning, saying he wants to talk about the idea.
Seriously? So you think he's thinking of you?
I don't want to do it. I said that I could tell him how they could do it, because what we did at ON24 basically is everything you need to do to make that possible and work really well. So...
But you need to have a really credible journalist blogger to actually pull this thing off, I would think.
I think what you need is a group of people who understand that they're going to go in there and really try to honestly portray what they see for, a week or 2 weeks at a time. I think the big problem would be having one person on the same candidate's bus for the entire time, because the candidate invariably would seduce the blogger. Mm-hmm. Into really liking them and making them feel like they're part of the team. It's the embedded problem.
But you know that when hostages and kidnappers kind of bond.
Well, that's the Stockholm syndrome. But it's not quite like that, because you haven't been taken hostage by Senator Edwards. The reason that the army embeds journalists rather than just says journalists can follow the army around is that it makes them actually bond with the people that they're covering. Mm. It's a very clever psychological move. Mm-hmm. There's a sense of, we're all in this together, and so we can't say anything about these
guys. I never
thought
of that.
So I would not want to see one person, assigned to Edwards and one for Kerry and one for Clinton and one for, everybody else. I'd rather see them either move amongst the different candidates frequently, mm-hmm. or that you actually have people who are, just new. And go through some training about, okay, here's what we're doing. It's a matter of keeping a public record about this candidate. It's not about blogging and your opinion. It's about keeping a public record. Then on your blog, you can put your own opinion up all you want, but we just want you to make sure that everybody has, you know, sees that when this candidate walked away from the podium where he got a really harsh beating from somebody in a, from a question, that he is the kind of person who has the character to say, wow, well, you know, he got me on that one or whatever. I mean, you know, so that we can see these people and see them deliberate, because one of the things you never see with the mainstream coverage is anything that isn't prepared.
Yeah, that's true.
And if you just did, if you just look behind that veil a little bit and saw how human these people are, I think a lot of our ridiculous expectations of perfection in our politicians would just fade away.
Well, wouldn't all the candidates have to do this for it to be fair, or because of that?
I think somebody has to do it.
Be a target because of the revealing of weakness.
I think obviously there should be a call for every candidate to do it, but I don't think everyone would. And I think that given the fact that you had what was, you know, total access, and obviously it still would be somewhat limited. That's only fair. These people have lives.
Yeah.
But you would have much more access, and I think that would generate far more attention for the candidate who had the who had granted the access in a way that the other people would be seen as secretive.
They'd be jealous, and they'd do it just because of the pressure of it.
Yeah, I think they would ultimately have to do it because it was seen as being not transparent.
Yeah.
So is it possible that, the other candidates could use that against him, though, in campaign commercials and things like that, if he happens to slip up? And
John Edwards picks his nose.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's probably a less example of what would
happen. Yeah, but the thing is, I mean, that's where our politics already is.
That's true.
You know, they just find the most ridiculous things to
throw mud at glom. People. Yeah.
If everybody saw a candidate for who he was, and including saw the candidate being, you know, angry and hurt by something that was, you know, unfair, like the Swift boat attack or calling George Bush a coward, you know, either one of those things. If you saw the candidate have the human reaction and you know, deal with it, I think that'd be a lot more important to us as, you know, seeing these people as men and women who want to have our vote rather than just we're going to elevate them to Olympus for the next 4 or 8 years and then leave them alone.
Yeah. There was a research study that came out here from Nielsen Net Ratings here just the last couple of days that was it's basically saying that the podcasting has gained an important foothold in the U.S. adult online population. I actually blogged about this study earlier today. What it basically is saying is that about 6.6% of the U.S. adult online population, or about 9.2 million web users, have recently downloaded an audio podcast, and about 4%, or 5.6 million web users, have recently downloaded a video podcast, which actually they compared it in here that there's about 4.8% of the U.S. population has published a blog. And so what they're saying is that more people have actually listened to a podcast than are currently publishing blogs, which I thought was kind of an interesting comparison, but I'm not quite
sure.
Shall
we say apples to rutabaga?
Yeah, it is.
But so what they're saying is that there are there are more people who are listening, passively consuming, in other words, something, than are actively publishing and speaking their own minds. That is a very odd comparison.
Yeah, shocking. It is.
It's about what, just a little under 2% greater, which I guess doesn't really speak well for how big podcasting is, though, really, when you think about it, as far as listenership, because a more accurate comparison would be how many people are reading blogs.
Yeah, reading blogs, which is listening to podcasts.
Yeah,
which
exactly. Is it going to be twice that number, you think? You think it's like 10%, or you think it's
I think
that
far more than, far more people are reading blogs than are listening to podcasts.
You bet.
It's an odd comparison. It doesn't tell me anything about the relative importance of podcasting.
Plus, they also in this study use a lot of terminology that's rather confusing, which kind of points to me that maybe the people that did the study or the ones that actually wrote the report didn't really know a whole lot about podcasting.
Either that or marketing got hold of it and said, let's make a headline.
Yeah, because they actually refer to people that listen to podcasts. Now, keep that in mind. People that listen to podcasts are podcasting, or they're podcasters. That's the context that they're using to describe listeners.
Well, that's pure idiocy.
It is.
What do you call a listener of podcasts, though? What would be the name for that?
How about a podcast listener?
Okay.
or someone who listens to podcasts.
Okay, this,
someone who listens to podcasts or a podcast listener, instead of calling them a podcaster or a person that podcasting.
Yeah, well, and then what would you call a blog reader? Well, I'd call them a blog reader, but you know, that doesn't make
them
a blogger. They would call them a blogger.
Which really kind of makes you wonder if Nielsen Net Ratings is really,
smoking crack.
Really done very good research here.
Well, you know, the thing they did this week that I thought was really interesting is they announced they're going to start reporting the ratings on televised ads.
Which is interesting.
I think is really interesting and you know, probably more in their line of expertise since they do that for television shows already. But it's going to be really important because you're going to see for the first time advertisers and ad executives confronted with hard, you know, statistical evidence that what they do doesn't work very well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's going to be a boon for not only better TV commercials, because there's, you know, clearly going to be some kind of a backlash within the industry where they say, oh, gee, we got to do a better job. But it's going to be an important boon for people who are podcasting and blogging and doing all these other things that are attracting what we call micro audiences. And those guys are going to hear more and more from people who say, you know, we get this number and we don't even know what the number is going to look like. But, you know, it turns out that 9 out of 10 people don't watch our ads on these super popular shows where we're paying a premium. For the same price that we pay for one insert on a television show like 24, we could pay for your podcast for a year.
I know.
You know?
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And I don't just mean, you know, one insert a show on your podcast. You pay for the whole podcast. So you'll see a
like
lot more
one
experimentation.
Sponsor for a whole program instead of like 10 that they usually do on television spots. Well, Google also is, it sounds like they're getting close to launching their Google Audio offering, which is basically going to be an auction-based system. And actually, I've been following this for many months. They went out and bought a company.
Yeah,
that
has, I wrote that, about it too.
Yeah. What they're going to really do, I think, is auction off radio spot time.
Yeah, well, that's what the company does, is place audio ads on radio stations, but it'll also be able to serve the podcasting community.
Exactly.
So are you guys only talking about ad inserts for podcasting? You're not talking about banners and other web advertising?
Yeah, just for the audio.
Yeah, just audio. I think that they're also going to try and dive into the broadcast radio market as well.
Oh, no, they're already there.
Yeah.
So what they'll do is they'll say, where do you want to do it? And it doesn't really matter whether it's online or podcast. They can, you know, you'll be able to buy either one.
Maybe we should start upping the number of web talk shows that we do now, because there might be advertisers in our future.
Well, and I think what you'll have to do as a podcaster, you'll have to obviously be a part of their program, just like you do with the
AdSense,
the AdSense program today. Yeah. The advertisers will buy against the probably tagged keywords that would be associated with your podcast.
Yeah, I would think so.
So I think that's kind of.
And then number reporting, I mean, the ratings basically for your podcast is already tracked and reported back to the advertiser. It's got to be, right? Or would it be?
Well, that's an interesting question.
I mean, because that's the whole reason why
they're
migrating away.
There's no explanation. There's no explanation of how they can do that right now. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's what we built for the Audible offering, is the ability to actually report on whether somebody listened to something and got downloaded, and whether the ads were listened to or fast forwarded through. So, I mean, you know.
Wow.
The last story here, and we'll wrap up the show for this week. Rocket Boom 2.0 launches. Actually, by the time you hear this, it'll be up for a couple of days. Does anybody care?
Let's do the background. So Amanda Cogdon, who was the previous host of Rocket Boom, was an aspiring actress prior to Rocket Boom, as we know, and she had been on some television reality show, which is where, you know, she apparently got the chops to do it, and she's very good.
Yeah.
Went off to Hollywood to pursue new opportunities. And Rocket Boom, the other person who created Rocket Boom, Andrew Barron, is hiring a new host for the show. I believe the host is the former MTV VJ from Europe, a female.
Joanna Cullen, I think.
Yeah, so the note I remember reading on, I think it might have been on Chris Perillo's list, was, well, at least there'll be more slinky tops on the show. But
there you go.
Yeah. But, you know, a lot of people in the podcasting and blog world thought that Rocket Boom was the breakthrough program, the thing that really changed everything. And I think that's partly...
That's probably true, I would say.
It's true in one dimension. I mean, it certainly got some attention. And, you know, they got on CSI as, you know, as a way of showing that a character was a techie, was he watched Rocket Boom.
Yeah.
And I think that, nevertheless, that almost no one really knows what Rocket Boom is. And this big tempest, because this actually took over, you know, I mean, it was like the top Technorati story and the top story on memorandum and all sorts of different things.
Well, really, it's only what 300,000 downloads a day that they have probably for this program. It's actually available. I can get it on my TiVo.
Yeah.
It actually downloads through my wireless network into my TiVo box.
Yeah. So
every day. So I can watch it on my big screen.
That's true, but I don't think that the program was, you know, the kind of culture changer that has broken major barriers before. So, you know, it was a good show, and I thought Amanda was funny, and sometimes I thought that they needed better writers.
Yeah, like the 3 minutes of Amanda staring silently at the camera. That was very interesting.
Well, it's a fairly small operation.
I don't see the allure of that show at all.
Was she making the love lips with them?
No, she's just like looking around. She looked down, just very normal, like,
well, just to be different, kind of shake things up. I mean, that's not what typically you see in
but I can
video.
See that by watching CNN's feeds without the
without the audio. Yeah, sure. I mean, I think it's something that's really an example of how the whole media landscape has changed. Because I know that the Wired had a big article up about how media distribution has changed, and they used Rocket Boom as an example. And I think this show is a good example of kind of the early days of kind of diverse distribution on the web and then off the web. And
you guys
like
have been
that.
Distributed every way I can think of.
Yeah, and I think if you look at like us as a podcast and you look at Rocket Boom as a video podcast, I think both programs were kind of pioneering that whole distributed distribution architecture that that I think we're starting to see really reach its pinnacle now. And its syndication is really what it is.
Yeah, and the question is how would you earn money over the long term? Because, you know, will we think of the classic Rocket Boom episodes that we want to get, you know, or the one I remember was Amanda drinking a beer every time Bush said weapons of mass destruction during a State of the Union speech, which actually was kind of funny. Although she doesn't play drunk as well as some people. But, you know, I don't think we're going to say it's like, you know, I want to see those original I Love Lucy shows. It's just not like that.
Yeah.
And we haven't reached that point yet. I mean, so a lot of this, you know, Sturm und Drang that came around, you know, Amanda quitting, it was just overblown.
Well, it was really very similar to what we saw happen with Robert Scoble when he left Microsoft. I mean, it was very much of an explosion of attention because, it was perceived as somebody that a fair amount of people had an affinity towards that made a change, and this one especially had.
That Robert has more subscribers now than before, so it actually was a gain for him. But the question is whether or not
that's
the stage he was standing on, Microsoft, was the key to his success, or whether it was Robert. And now we're going to see as he goes on, and it's also going to be true for Rocket Boom. It's going to be, can Amanda do something other than sit behind a desk, and can Andrew and the gang at Rocket Boom do the same funny stuff or funnier stuff with a different host.
So did you see the new Rocket Boom episode with the new host today?
No, I didn't.
You didn't see it?
I have things to do.
I actually watched it. I thought.
And what did you think?
I thought that Joanna did a pretty good job for her first episode. She actually...
She was engaging?
Very beginning
what was
of
she
the,
wearing?
At the very beginning of the podcast, she was wearing a face mask and protective gear. And there was video of a bunch of tomatoes getting thrown at her right at the very beginning of it, and I guess they were kind of making fun of the light that people were going to, I guess, kind of miss Amanda, I guess. And then
I think, you know, if they had done that with CBS Evening News, that things would have gone a lot better with their transition.
Yeah, I think so, too. And then
the guest host on The View after the
Kickstarter. And then Mr. Andrew Barron was down on the ground looking like he was had gone insane or something like that. He was, like, spaced out.
So what you're saying is it sounds a lot like one of those local insurance commercials where the insurance guy says, wow, I can be on TV, and then he makes a really cheesy ad, and you stop and you think to yourself,
what was that?
Is that Vern?
So I feel like it just got, Vern Funk.
Vern Funk, yeah, that's his name.
Vern Funk.
And he did one where he was like, he had this huge zit, and he was going to pop a zit on a customer, and I thought, you know, what the hell is this? But, you know, it's because the guy had the money to buy a commercial.
But he's a cult figure now. I mean, everybody knows who he is, and I don't know how many people actually buy insurance from him, but he's made himself become a...
I would never buy insurance from
a cult figure.
A person based on those ads.
No, that's true.
I don't care how much money you can save me.
Well, and it's a good,
I don't care if he has a little green gecko.
I mean, it's a good lesson.
Screw him. I don't want to hear from him.
Well, what do you mean from, was it Geico?
Well, it doesn't matter. I mean,
Geico,
I'm saying
is a green
you could
gecko.
Put, you could give this Vern Funk guy with the zit, the Geico gecko, who, you know, tells me I can save money and he, you know,
and he'll babysit your kids.
He could buy every corporate mascot and put them all in the ads with himself. And I still wouldn't trust him anymore.
Couldn't Vern Funk start a video podcast and be pretty successful?
You know what my favorite video podcast is?
What's that?
It's this guy called The Big Man. The Big Man. And he's a ticket, basically a ticket scalper in New Jersey. And this, he does these rants, and it's just, you know, this old Bronx kind of.
I've seen that this, on, you know, and on he does, YouTube.
He did this great thing about going to Starbucks. A slice of coffee cake and a coffee, $7. I said, well, fuck that!
He's in his undershirt or something in his basement. I don't know.
And it's just, I mean, but the thing is, that's, if I wanted to buy tickets, that, you know, basically an illegal activity, right? Because he sells tickets to events, which means he scalps tickets. I'd go buy something from that guy because he was really being himself instead of trying to act like, you know, whatever it was, this show that this other guy. And there have been these kinds of local commercials forever. Mm-hmm. And some of them work. I mean, there's this guy when we were kids named Dick Balch.
Yeah, I remember Dick Balch.
See, we remember Dick Balch. He used to break cars with a sledgehammer.
Sledgehammer, he'd break the windshield or whatever.
Yeah, and it made him a lot of money.
Yeah.
But that doesn't make you a talent, you know?
I mean, I think if you look at, like, Ask the Ninja video podcast.
Yeah, hilarious. I think they're very good.
I mean, talk about a video that's edited. I mean, just insanely edited. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, cut constantly. It's like
a ninja cut the
video.
Yeah,
it's like it's like sliced and diced. I mean, you should see this podcast. It's actually I've shown it to some people and they kind of have a negative reaction to it.
So what?
It's like a ninja. Boy, that's kind of negative. It's dark. It's kind of, you know, but if you really listen to the guy, he actually does a pretty good job. I mean, the
script is always very, very clever.
It is. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes he doesn't even deliver it as well as it's written, and it's still very good.
Mm-hmm. But it's just
now, the ninja's going to hunt me down and kill me because I said that. Ask a Ninja has a net neutrality episode, and if you want to understand net neutrality, I highly recommend going to watch the Ask a Ninja on net neutrality.
And also, he does one on What's a Podcast.
Yeah,
and it actually uses like the example of brine shrimp to represent podcasts out there.
Because brine shrimp, they rock.
Yeah.
And it can apparently be a ninja weapon.
Could throw brine shrimp. It's like a...
You guys, again, not a TV program, a radio show.
Okay, we're a radio show. Well, I mean, but we had the sound effects.
Rob was making a sort of a flicking a shuriken motion.
Yeah, I was.
With his brine shrimp.
Well, Mitch, thank you for coming in here and spending
a pleasure.
45 minutes
to be here
with us.
Both of you.
Thank you for the counseling.
I think the counseling is all going to work out just fine.
Is it? Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for the help.
I'm calming and soothing.
So
remember, this is your safe space. Web talk.
It is. So go find Mitch's blog. It's at ZDNet.com.
No, you go to blogs.ZDNet.com/Ratcliffe.
/Ratcliffe. And then your RatcliffeBlog.com.
Yes.
Which?
I still write.
You do.
Yeah, you don't look at it, but
no, I do. No, actually,
I did.
I was kind of pulling your leg
on the tour, and I did a thing on the soccer final.
You were telling me just before we recorded the show that you've had some issues with your ISP and your
You couldn't find it right now because the ISP has completely rat fucked me. But you know, it'll be back someday.
Back someday.
Well, as soon as. Quest stops interfering with my COVID account.
I know this is a whole other interesting topic, actually.
Yeah, well, I actually left my mother-in-law on hold. She was talking. I said, here, just take the phone. I was on hold with the manager, and I said, tell him I'm going to do a technology talk show, and I'm in a bad mood.
That's a threat.
You were actually trying to add more connectivity to your house by going to another ISP, and
I was adding a second line because
the old
our house
one canceled
is just,
your,
the new one
canceled
the old
one. Yeah.
Even though we explicitly told them not to do anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So now you followed through on your threat that you were able to name names a little bit here at the end of the show.
The name of the company that slammed us for all intents and purposes is Quest, mm-hmm. who I admire for having not given the NSA my call records data.
That's true.
So, you know, everything is relative. But they, you know, they need to make good. And you may not be able to find my blog for the next week because of them.
Thank you. Thank you, Quest.
Thank you. See, that's what I don't want to be in a position with the carriers where I have to say thank you for anything. I mean, after all, I pay them enough already.
Yeah, that's true. Well, Dana, thanks you for joining us again and running the board and the operations.
Thanks, everybody, for coming and hanging in there with us, even though we've been every, 3 weeks now. So we'll try and be better, but appreciate it.
I know. I think Mitch told us we just need to do it. But
well, that's part of his marriage counseling advice.
Yeah. Okay. We're wrapping up another show, Web Talk Radio. And definitely come back and check out our show next week or the week after whenever we make one. See you around then.
Adios.
That's all the time we have. Thank you so much for listening. Be sure to check out webtalkradio.com for many, many more conversations about the future of the internet.